Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Tammy Carver. Welcome to the John Carver Show. My husband has helped thousands of people around the world lead happier and more successful lives. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, this show will help you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So the text I'm calling here today, grabbing the steering wheel. Have you ever been going through a situation in your life that stuff happens that you had no intention of things happening in the way that it happened in your life? Have you ever had sudden calamity or sudden struggle or a sudden difficulty that may have come your way that maybe threw you for a loop in one form or another? Over in Esther chapter 4, if you want to turn over to Esther chapter 4, it's the Old Testament story, and it talks about a queen that was brought into a situation where she had the opportunity to change the lives of, I would say, at least hundreds of thousands of people. And she was intimidated by the laws of the land. And in this situation, in this culture, if her husband, the king, would not have called her and said, "Come to me," if she approached him without being beckoned, if you will, she could have been killed. So let me pick up the story in Esther chapter 4, verse number 12. So it says, "So Hathaka gave Esther's message to Mordecai, and Mordecai sent this reply to Esther. He said, quote, "Don't think for a moment that because you're in the palace, you will escape what all other Jews are killed." So the story, let me back up again on the story. The story was, again, it's a longer story, but there was a plot to kill all the Jewish people in that land. Esther was Jewish. Her husband, the king, didn't know she was Jewish. I continue with the story. "If you keep quiet at a time like this, listen, deliverance and relief for the Jews will arise from some other place. But you and your relatives will die. Who knows if perhaps you were made queen, listen, for such a time as this." Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai, her uncle, by the way, and her foster dad, adoptive dad, if you will. He says, "Go and gather together all the Jews of Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will do the same. And then, though it is against the law," listen, "though it is against the law, I will go in and see the king. If I must die," this paraphrase says, "I must die." Now, it is really difficult to face certain, in her case, certain death by doing the right thing. And the older I get, I really try to place things in perspective. Is it easy always to place things in perspective? But it's easier when you step back and look at the lives of other people that have done things much more difficult than you're even challenged to do, and they did it. So it's really important to look back through history, to look back through the difficulties that other folks have faced, whereby then you can overcome whatever you need to. So sometimes it's impossible, I think at least in my case, to describe the emotional pain that you're dealing with. I think Esther, without a doubt, must have faced some very difficult emotional pain. I don't know what temperament she had. I don't know if she was a go-getter. I don't know if she was more on the shy side. I don't really know that. But I do know that if it was me, I'd be slightly intimidated that if I were to break the law and approach this person that I could have been killed, I would have hesitated considerably. Turn over, if you will, over to Mark chapter 5 in the New Testament. Mark chapter 5 shares a story that rings true, I think, in a lot of our hearts. that we've heard a couple of times. Mark chapter 5 says this, in verse 21, when Jesus had crossed over again in the boat to the other side, a large crowd gathered around him. And so he stayed by the seashore. One of the synagogue officials named Jairus came up and on seeing him, fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, my little daughter is at the point of death. Please come and lay your hands on her so that she will get well and live. And he went off with him, and a large crowd was following him and pressing in on him. Now, there comes a time, let me pause the story, there comes a time when interruptions can literally get you off track. And I know I'm not the only one, but how many times in your own life have you been interrupted and gotten you off track of what you were trying to accomplish? So the story goes on to share that as he was on the way, he was, and I'll use the word in quotes, interrupted. Interrupted. There are times in your life, in my life, that interruptions are divinely ordained, if I can use that term, that religious term. That sometimes interruptions can cause you to make a difference in other people's lives that ripples through other people's lives as a result of the interruption. But the interruption in this story was about a woman who was hemorrhaging for a long time. Again, Jesus was on the way to hopefully help a young girl who passed away, but the interruption got in the way. So this was a Jewish dad who really set aside his religious dogma and saw that maybe Jesus had an answer for him, maybe that Jesus had a way to help his daughter. And then there came a time when the interruption came, and then all others came to Jesus in the story. I'm not going to read the whole story, but the story says that Jesus was interrupted, and then somebody came and says, don't come anymore. So the story continues down in verse 35. Again, back to Mark 5. While he was still speaking, they came from the house of the religious man, saying, your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher anymore? Angela Watson says, when things go smoothly, that's my plan. I don't know about you, but I like things to go smoothly in my plan. When things don't go smoothly, I kind of get a little, as my grandmother used to say, jiggitated. I have to get jiggitated. She goes on to say, when there are interruptions that I didn't foresee or even want, that's God's plan. This is Angela Watson's words. He willed or allowed those things to happen. To fight them is to fight God's will. This is difficult for me to even say, let alone live. So getting irritated or trying not to have interruptions, listen, is missing out on the joy of being part of God's plan. Uh-oh, it gets a little more frustrating here. Interruptions allow us to bless someone else. Think about the story I just shared, or a piece of the story. Again, interruptions allow us to bless someone else. Interruptions provide unforeseen opportunities and blessings for us. I can only speak for me, but I sometimes forget that the interruptions that come my way are not only for an opportunity to bless other people, but as a result of blessing other people, guess what happens? As a byproduct, I am blessed when I bless others. When you bless others, we are blessed. Robert Schuller said one time that God's delays are not God's denials. And that's like swallowing a horse pill. Have you ever been wondering why and when, and you're not sure what if it's even going to happen? Desperation, I think, sometimes makes us reprioritize our feelings. Because when we get desperate, it almost forces you and I to step back from the situation and look at it from a different way, if at least you're smart enough to look at it from a different way, instead of living in the frustration. Because it's really difficult for some of us people to live in the frustration, to get out of the frustration, look at it from a maybe a smarter way. So Angela Watson goes on to say again, interruptions allow us to bless someone else. So you and I have to be maybe willing to be interrupted. And I could probably go on a tangent about that. But being willing to be interrupted may enable you to bring, and I'll use the word in quotes, miracles into the lives of other people that may not have happened if it wasn't for the interruption. So maybe your agenda, maybe my agenda, maybe my schedule, maybe your schedule isn't the schedule that we need to keep so regimentedly for that day, because there are opportunities to be interrupted to be a blessing to other people. So if you think about this, if I widen the story a bit, let's go down to verse 36 in the same book. But Jesus, overhearing what was being spoken, said to the synagogue official, "Do not be afraid any longer, only believe." Now listen, if you stop and think about this a minute, if I was Jairus, if I was the dad of Jairus' daughter, I would have been, knowing how I'm wired, I can't speak for how you're wired, but if it was me, my temper would have been out of control that this woman who was hemorrhaging granted a legitimate need, a lifelong need, or at least for a long time. She cost my daughter her life. Let me say it a different way. The interruption cost my daughter her life. Let me go back again to verse 36. But Jesus, overhearing what was being spoken, said to the synagogue official, "Do not be afraid any longer, only believe." So they came into the house of the synagogue official, and he saw a commotion and people loudly weeping and wailing. That was the culture of the time. When people passed away, it still is that culture of the time. They wept loudly. It was an elaborate event, let me put it that way. Verse 39. And entering in, he said to them, "Why make a commotion and weep? The child has not died, but is asleep." Think about this for a moment about perspective. When you see things from a certain way, you see things from a certain way. If you can't see things from a certain way, you can't see things from a certain way. Jesus saw the little girl has not have died, but in his mind only asleep. They began to laugh at him, but putting them all out, he took along the child's father and mother and his own companions and entered into the room where the child was. Now stop and think of it. There's a little phrase in there that I want to go back to that is overlooked by all of us at some point. He says, but putting them all out. I've said it in many ways, in different forms from this church, that there are times when you and I have to put people out of our lives that get in the way of us seeing things from a certain point of view. Because the people that you surround yourself with will what? Will impact the way you see things from certain points of view. So if you want to see things from a correct point of view, then for you and I think it's important to get some people away. It sounds really cold, I think, to get people away from you in order for you to see clearly. So in verse number 41, it says this, taking the child by the hand, he said to her, which is translated, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl got up and began to walk, and she was 12 years old. And immediately they were completely astounded. Then it got a little more interesting to me as a guy. Verse 43 says this, and he gave them strict orders that no one should know about this, and he said that something should be given her to eat. Now fast forward 2,000 years. I think most preachers, maybe that's a stretch, many preachers would have had cameras, would have had live shots, would have had Facebook mentions on there where it's a live video feed of what was happening. And then so the whole region, the whole world would have eventually seen this miracle. But this says something about Jesus' character. Again, verse 43. And he gave them strict orders that no one should know about this. This says something about humility, doesn't it? Jesus was humble. He knew that at least at that time, it wasn't his time, and that he was willing to do things on God's timetable. Sometimes God grabs the steering wheel out of our hands to get us back on course. Let me say it a different way. Sometimes the interruptions that come in our lives are God's way of grabbing the steering wheel of our lives to get us back on track, whereby we think it's an interruption, but really it is a redirection. Let me say it again. Sometimes the interruption in our minds can be, you know, a distraction, but it can really be a redirection to go on a path that you should have been on, but you were distracted and you had your own agenda and your own desire to do certain things. So just maybe, that sometimes, not all the time, granted, that sometimes distractions could be a redirection. Stephen Rummage shares, a few years ago, my family was traveling from Brandon to Atlanta. So after programming our destination on the GPS, we left home and headed to Interstate 75. And as we started to drive, you know, the voice on the GPS, you know, because he wasn't used to a lady telling him to do stuff. And, you know, so he says, you know, I thought I better listen to her. So we were making really good time through Florida. But once we crossed over the state of Georgia, we started to slow down. We slowed down from 70 to 50 and then down to 30. And then we just were creeping along. We were barely moving and we began to wonder what we were going to do. Story says we had a certain amount of time and we needed to arrive at our destination, and that time was running out. We exited off the interstate and we looked out across the highway from the overpass bridge, and as far as we could see, it was just gridlock, just nonstop. Then my wife did something that I didn't even know you could do. She went onto the GPS system and punched in a couple of buttons and asked for a detour route. The system calculated for a little bit and then put us on another set of roads, and we began to drive. I discovered that there are some things you begin to wonder, listen, when you're on the detour. Things like, how long am I going to be on these roads? And how long is it going to take me to get back where I originally intended to be? You wonder, what am I going to see and what am I going to experience while I'm on this detour? The point being is detours are sometimes not always a bad thing. There are times when detours are pre-planned in a way that you and I won't understand until we get through the detour. Have you ever seen things and beautiful scenery and or homes and or other things when you're on the detour that you wouldn't have seen if you would have stayed on the freeway? So it's all about perspective. It's all really about attitude. I have to learn that yet. Granted, I haven't learned that because I don't like detours, frankly, but that's a lesson I think for all of us to maybe embrace, that sometimes detours are not always a bad thing. Aaron Chewing writes, as a nervous 15-year-old who was learning to drive, I was involved in an accident, but it wasn't my fault. But when I slammed on the brakes of the car, that jolted, my pulse raced, and my mind froze, and clueless, I didn't know what to do next. Thankfully, my dad was there, and he reached across the console to help steer our car away from an embankment that it was approaching. He had not done, so that Saturday afternoon, he could have really quickly turned solemn, and Dad did what was necessary to help me, a young driver with limited knowledge, and his actions kept my mother and sister and me from danger. I know quite a few people in the world who are so adamant about doing what they want to do that they get angry when there are people that come alongside them and, if I could be so bold, grab the steering wheel and say, you know what, if you don't make some changes now, you're going to wreck the car. You're going to wreck your life. I believe that the number of years that you breathe oxygen, the more, at least the wiser you become in understanding that there may be some people who know a little more about driving or living or doing things in certain life than you do. If you haven't been breathing oxygen long enough, you don't understand that yet. So I'm hoping that this text maybe will encourage those of us who are younger than 90 we'll understand that maybe there are people that are wiser and smarter than us. Turn over, if you will, to Luke chapter 24. Luke chapter 24, it says this. This is really talking about how the followers of Jesus had a mindset that Jesus was going to radically change the culture to their benefit. Let me share in Luke 24, verse 21. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, it is the third day since these things happened. Let me set the scene. The culture was ruled by Italy, which was the government of Rome, and the Israeli region was under that authority, and they could only do so much. They really weren't free. So when Jesus came along, the followers of Jesus and others thought that he was going to be the one that would free them from this domination of Rome. So when Jesus was eventually crucified and now died, they had this mindset again. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, it is the third day since these things happened. In fact, the actual Greek phrase is loosening the Israel. That they thought that Jesus was going to loosen Israel from the Roman chains, if you will, in quotes. But Jesus did things that didn't make sense to the followers of Jesus until sometime after what he did and how he did it. How many times haven't you been able to embrace things or experience things that you would not have chosen, but as a result of the actions of life and or other people and maybe God moving in your life, that things happened in a way that you couldn't have figured it out. You couldn't have planned it, but as a result of it, you're much better off than you were if things didn't happen in that certain way. So all their hopes were dashed. Because they expected, again, Jesus was going to free them from all this bondage. Now, I don't know why, but it seems like the third day throughout Scripture, actually in several cases, I'm not going to get into all of it, but in several cases that third day is a big deal. Things happen in Scripture several times on that third day, but when you're in the middle of it, you don't think about stuff like that. They weren't thinking about stuff in that arena. Turn over to Luke chapter 24. Luke chapter 24. Verse number 6. Let's start there. Luke 24, verse 6. It says, "He is not here, but he is risen. Remember how he spoke to you while he was still in Galilee?" Let me just back up to verse 4 again in a paraphrased form. It says, "They were puzzled, wondering what to make of this. Then out of nowhere, it seemed, two men, light cascading over them, stood there, and the women were awestruck and bowed down in worship. But the men said, 'Why are you looking for the living one in a cemetery?'" Think about that a minute, this paraphrase says. "Why are you looking for the living one in a cemetery? He's not here, but raised up." Remember, listen to this again. "Remember how he told you when you were still back in Galilee that he had to be handed over to sinners to be killed on a cross and then in 3 days rise up?" Then they remember Jesus' words. How many times, I know I'm not the only one, but how many times don't you hear stuff until after stuff happens? Yeah. Folks tell you this is going to happen, but I hear it, I'm looking at the person, but it doesn't register until after the event. I have to believe that this happened to these people. That Jesus told them that certain things were going to happen, but then it clicked after certain things happened, and maybe after they were reminded, look, remember what Jesus said? He said this was going to happen. One of those aha moments, remember that? I think all of us happened to us multiple times. Then they remembered words, because oftentimes in our despair, we forget the truth. In our despair, we forget what we're told. In our despair, our emotions overwhelm what we remember because we're dealing with the emotion of the moment. Over in Luke chapter 24, and starting in verse number 13, it says this, "And behold, two of them were going that very day to a village named Emmaus, which is about 7 miles from Jerusalem." I'm in Luke 24. Now verse 14. And they were walking with each other about all these things that had been taking place. And while they were talking and discussing, listen, Jesus himself approached them and began traveling with them. Now, this is after Jesus had been crucified and obviously rose from the dead. But listen, verse 16, but their eyes were prevented from recognizing them. How many times haven't you have seen stuff, but you haven't seen stuff?
Yeah.
You're looking right at it, but you can't. Let me give you a great example, a stupid, crazy example. I don't know why it is, but the twisty ties that you have on bread, I don't know if it happens at your house, but I'll undo the twisty ties, I'll put them on the counter, put some toast in. 7 times or 8 times out of 10, I cannot find the twisty ties on the counter. At least on our counter, it blends right in. I don't know if it's your counter or my counter. I don't know what, but I can't find the counter, the twisty thing. So I have to take my hand many times. Maybe it's the collarblind thing. I don't know. So I run my hand. Sometimes I don't even feel it. And I have to get down eye level to try to find it. And then sometimes I say something, and then I go get another twisty tie or get a little clothespin thing to forget it. It'll show up. The point is, sometimes you can't see what's right in front of your own eyes. And I think this is an example, a silly example, maybe, that they were prevented from seeing Jesus. So then verse 17, it says, and he said to them, what are these words that you're exchanging with one another as you're walking? And they stood still, looking sad. One of them, named Cleopas, answered and said to him, are you the only one visiting Jerusalem and unaware of the things that have happened here in these days? Verse 19. And he said to them, what things? Think about this a minute. Think about this. This is Jesus who it happened to. And, you know, like, you know, I'm the dude it happened to, right? I just find it funny. So, which, again, is another story and is another tangent. I'll try to leave that alone. Verse 19 again. And he said to them, what things? And he said to him, the things about Jesus the Nazarene, who was, past tense, a prophet mightily in deed and word in the sight of God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to the sentence of death and crucified him. I said this probably in the last month, I can't remember which week, but I said that the ability for us to ask questions in a certain way enables people to really answer their own questions. Think about this a minute. Now, verse 21. But we were hoping that he was the one going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, it is the third day since these things happened. So really, sometimes, again, I'm repeating a little bit of what I said a week or two or three ago, that sometimes questions, properly phrased questions, enable us to answer our own problems so many times. So Jesus was, in essence, an example to all of us that we have the ability to go through detours and see blessings and opportunities to change people's lives as a result of sometimes of radical detours that you would not have chosen. I wouldn't have chosen certain things to happen. But what can you see in the middle of the detour that you would not have seen if there wasn't a detour? Man, could I go on a tangent on that, but I'll leave that alone. But listen, let me say it a different way. Opportunities that you cannot imagine can open up in the middle of a detour if you see the opportunities in the middle of the detour, meaning that you have to be looking for the opportunities in the middle of that detour. So Jesus taught over and over again, wherever he lived, that in the middle of the shadow of the government that was reigning over that culture, he was still changing lives. Now, for me, I can only speak for me, but am I going to allow the shadow of negative people or people that maybe don't think exactly the way I think to keep me closed up? Let me say it a different way. The older I get, I realize that I'm going to be dead a lot longer than I'm alive. I know it sounds really crazy and stupid, doesn't it? But I'm going to be dead a lot longer than I've been alive. So what am I going to do? Somebody said, I can't remember who said it, but what is your dash going to stand for between the time you were born and the time you died? What is that dash going to be? I mean, is that dash going to mean anything to anybody except you sitting in front of a TV for the next 87 years, or not really impacting other people's lives. I can only speak for me, but that dash is very important for us to really embrace. So you can see oftentimes that there were some followers of Jesus, and again, I'm going back and forth in the timeline, but if you remember that when Jesus was then crucified, that was a major detour, it was a major distraction, that was a major misunderstanding that the followers of Jesus had. Again, their understanding was Jesus came to rule and to reign, R-E-I-G-N. Not to be, at least in some people's eyes, killed, murdered by the Roman government. So Jesus did things differently than what his followers expected. So there's a few, I think, takeaways from this whole situation. Our expectations can determine our attitude. And that can be really shared in a variety of different ways. How many times have you gone into a relationship or a job interview or a meeting or a restaurant and you have a certain expectation? So your attitude's based on the expectation. Last night, silly example, I took out Tim and Christina to get a quick bite to eat, and within 12 feet of me was this 18-month-old-ish child that her scream literally hurt my ears. And about every 5 minutes or so, 4 minutes or so, this little girl would scream. The people around them would be, you know, upset about it. But I tried to keep my focus that, you know what, this scream was not going to determine my attitude to enjoy the meal with my two kids. Guess what? It destroyed my meal with my two kids, because my expectation in this place was, it was just a little cheap little $8 meal. But the point is that my expectation was to have some sort of peace and quiet. So the distractions, the detours can, if you're not, let me say it a different way. If you're not smart enough, you can allow the distractions, not smart enough here, to allow to disrupt your peace in the middle of the detour. How many times haven't you allowed outside influences to disrupt your peace? Whether it's a coworker, whether it's a neighbor. Oh, I can tell you story after story. Sometimes we just don't get it, do we? Sometimes we cry and complain in the middle of the detour. I'm one of them. I cry and complain in the middle of the detour until I come across the aha or the moment that in the middle of the detour I say, okay, now I get it. But all, from point A until point D, when I'm shown with the purpose of the detour, I'm whining until the aha. Is that mature? Is that what I'm teaching? No, but that's who I am. Shame on me. So Jesus taught all of us, at least in this example of Jairus and the hemorrhaging woman, that in the middle of the detour, miracles can happen. People can be blessed. Actually, listen to this. Both people can be blessed. It doesn't mean, meaning that because of the detour doesn't mean that the reason you're going to point A from point B, that the miracle can't happen. It doesn't mean that at all. It means that God can do both. God can bless either here or there if we open up our hearts and minds to God. So your preconceived opinions and expectations can blind you to the truth. Your preconceived opinions and expectations can blind you to the truth. On August 1st, 2007, the I-35 West Bridge was an 8-mile lane, steel truss arched bridge carrying Interstate 35 West traffic across the Mississippi in Minnesota. During the evening rush hour, it suddenly collapsed, killing 13 people and injuring 145. There are many, many families who would have welcomed the sign, detour, bridge, unsafe. I believe there are people and situations and detours and signs and words and phrases and sermons and lessons that are saying detour, the bridge is out, but some of us don't get it. And then we look back and yell and complain about other people in our lives when we should have been listening to the people with the sign saying detour, bridge is out. So our misplaced expectations, I think, can bring huge discouragement. I can only speak for me. I can't speak for you. I'll say it again. our misplaced expectations can bring huge discouragement. That's why, not all the time, because I just told on myself quite a bit, but sometimes when you lower your expectations, you're not disappointed. That sounds probably kind of corny. Because when you don't expect too much, that anything you get is a blessing. Maybe that's a mind game I play with me, I don't know. But these days I'm trying to, not always, I'm trying to lower my expectations so much that when things happen, I'm thankful for the small things instead of not thankful for expecting so much more, if that makes any sense at all, right? Over in Isaiah, it says that, "For my thoughts are not God's thoughts, neither are," it says, "your ways, my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways," God's ways, "higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." How many times haven't you really tried to figure God out, or tried to figure God out, or life out, or other situations out, but it was impossible to figure it out? Because I think I could go back to Isaiah. There are some things that I can't comprehend. There are certain things that I don't get, and I don't think I will ever get. So why am I trying to figure it all out? So our expectations of God, listen, our expectations of God's plans for our lives limit the power of God in our lives. Let me say it again. Our expectations of God's plans for our lives limit the power of God in our lives. Let me say it a different way. If you have expectations in a box this size, you're only going to work according to that box size. You're only going to imagine. You're only going to grow as far as you can see the box. Well, if you lengthen the box, or if you throw the box away, then guess what happens? Then there's no limitations at all. So that's what I've been trying to learn in my older age, to take away the whole box. To, instead of making the box bigger, which still has limitations on it, throw the box away. The box doesn't even exist. So if you and I think about that God is a God of being not confined to space, not confined to time, not confined away to think how I think, thank the Almighty, but yet there are possibilities and infinite expectations that we can realize if we allow God to even take us down roads that we would have never chosen. And very, very frankly, I would not have even liked, and I don't like going down. But God opens up opportunities in your life as long as we take the limitations off of God and allow God to use us in a way that's beautiful. Let me close with this. We have to modify our beliefs, because I've said this multiple times, that your beliefs create your reality. Your beliefs create your reality. So if you ask God, in fact, Paula White tweeted years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, she said, "Take all limitations off and let God be big in your life." Again, take all limitations off and let God be big in your life. He's looking for someone to co-partner with on the earth. How many times have it you and I been afraid to step and do things because you think that when you step, there's nothing going to be there to support. There's nothing going to be there. Nobody's ever done it before. Which is really, think about this a minute. That's the stupidest thought you'd ever think. I mean, certainly other people have done it before. You're not the only one. So don't be afraid. Vince Lombardi said, "We would accomplish much more things if we did not think of them as impossible." Again, Vince Lombardi, "We would accomplish many more things if we did not think they were impossible." So God wants you and me really to believe that we can do the impossible. Who would have thought that we could be touching so many people every single week? Who would have thought it? There's always a way. Maybe it's not from A to B, but maybe it's from A to L to C to T to B to Z. You know, God doesn't go in straight lines. It drives me banana cakes, but God doesn't go in straight lines. So don't get angry about the detours, because there are lessons in the detours that you may not see on the freeway of life. I'm so fired up about my fourth book that came out. It's called Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks for a Successful and Rewarding Life. I've compressed about 25 years of knowledge, experience, and learning from a lot of people to help you in your life. You can get a copy of it over at TremendousLifeBooks.com. Again, TremendousLifeBooks.com. Here's some more information about it. For the last 25 years, I've visited with thousands of people in their homes. Many of these people I've met with have no goals, no dreams, no ambitions, and no roadmap for their life. I've seen so many people sitting on their front porches watching life go by. In 2006, my wife and I started building our home with bedrooms for each of our six kids. I always made sure that the foundation of our home was solid. I didn't want to take any chances with the lives of my family. So it is with life. My book, Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks of a Successful, Rewarding Life, is jammed full of ideas that can help you today. My book is a collection of ideas and short stories really designed to help you turn your life around and to help impact the people that you care about and that you love so much. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, Build Your Foundation will help you fortify yourself for a lifetime of success and to give you the courage to go for your dreams in life. Don't miss out on what you can accomplish. You can scale any height and achieve any goal. This book will help you get there. I have a passion to help millions of people change their lives. This book is easy to read, has short chapters, and can help you right now and change your life today. I believe in you. Thank you so much for listening to the John Carver Show. If you want more information about me, just simply go to my website, www.johnwcarver.com. Again, thanks so much for listening to the show today, and remember, I believe in you.
Thank you for listening to the John Carver Show. Please tune in again right here Monday through Friday for more insights and opinions on how you can reach your goals and dreams in life.